A smaller army, but more special forces and more cybersecurity battling. Those are some of the features in the 2013 National Defense Budget outlined by Defense Secretary Leon Panetta yesterday. At $525 billion, it's 1% less than this year's base budget. So has the administration ordered up a reshaping of the world's most powerful military, or has it just made a few minor adjustments? Joining us with some answers is Lawrence Korb. He's a senior fellow at the Center for American Progress and former Assistant Defense Secretary for Manpower and Logistics. Mr. Korb, great to have you on. Thanks for joining us.
It's nice to be with you.
All right, so what do you see as the most significant changes coming up for 2013?
Well, I think the most significant change is that, as former Secretary Gates said, the gusher of defense spending is over. Defense spending in real terms has gone up for 13 straight years. This is the base budget, and is now about 50% larger in real terms than it was at the beginning of this century, and higher, you know, on average than what we spent during the Cold War.
So,
and again, that's in real terms. So I think that's the most significant thing, that you just can't keep going up forever.
So they haven't really cut it so much as maybe slowed down the juggernaut.
Well, in fact, yeah, it'll go down between 2012 and 2013, but then it starts going up again. And if you take a look at, you know, it over the next decade, it's going to, according to them, it's still going to rise every year over the next decade. So, in my view, you know, it's good that you slowed it down. It was necessary, I think, for two reasons. One, obviously, you have the large deficit, federal deficit you're trying to deal with. And the other is that, as General Cartwright, who was the vice chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff till a couple of months ago, said, we didn't have to make any hard choices. We could have everything we wanted.
Now, I wanted to ask you about troops and staffing. Of course, you were the manpower and logistics person during, I guess, the early part of the Reagan administration at the Defense Department. And the secretary is calling for, I guess, about 10 or 11 fewer brigades in the Army. And so it sounds like we're substituting more expensive for fewer in terms of people, the same way we have been doing with weapon systems, because they didn't really talk about change too much in the cost structure of the forces per man. So how will they get savings, and when will we see savings? Because you just can't get rid of 10 brigades overnight.
Well, that's true. What they're going to do is gradually, over the next 5 years, reduce the ground forces, the Army and the Marines, to back to almost where they were before 9/11. You see, the big increase came when you went into Iraq and Afghanistan. You're out of Iraq. You're on your way out of Afghanistan. And so you're taking about, you're not even taking them back all the way to where they were on 9/11. So, I mean, when you take a look at it, you say, oh, my goodness, you know, we're really cutting them. Look, you always do that when the war's over, and you're still going to be higher than you were before the war started. The savings obviously come with, you know, each man or woman on the payroll for the Department of Defense cost about $150,000. So, you know, that's a pretty, you know, get the $100,000 off you, that's, you know, $15 billion a year.
All right, so are we talking in terms of the size of this particular budget relative to the last one and what some people were hoping for? You've got some cheering section going on there. Would you say it sounds a little bit like the Les Aspin budget in the, you know, in the early years of the Clinton administration?
No, it's nothing. It's nothing like that. If you take a look at Les Aspin's budget, again, if you put it in today's dollars, you know, you're talking about $360 billion, all right? And see, it's what happens. You know, people are saying, well, we don't want to make the same mistakes that we made, you know, when Aspin was there. You had the post-Cold War drawdown. Again, the fact of the matter was that was pretty good military. Went into Iraq and Afghanistan, did a good job at, you know, it handled Kosovo. So there's a lot of, you know, there's always, you know, you have this inflated rhetoric as people try and protect, you know, the things that they've been doing.
I'm curious what you expect to happen to pay and benefits for members of the military and DOD civilians as all of this budget crunch kind of starts to pile up at DOD.
I mean, there's no doubt about it. We finally, last year, people realized that, you know, the health care benefits for military retirees, as Admiral Mullen, who was then the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, said, you know, that they're eating us alive because they haven't raised the TRICARE, premium since 1995. You know, when we set that up, it was supposed to go up every year to reflect, cost growth in the healthcare sector. And again, it was supposed to be about half of what federal, retired employees pay. Right now, it's like 10% of what they pay. So yeah, that's gotta go up. Similarly, for active duty people, you have what we call the employment cost index, which is supposed to measure the pay raises. They've gone way over that, and for two reasons. One, the Congress each year keeps giving them more raises than they recommend for that, and the other is that they're supposed to use, total military compensation, not just base pay for that. As you know, if you've been in the service, you know that your base pay is only like 40% of, what your real wages are. So, yeah, they've got to bring that under control. They said they're going to, after 2 years, they're going to do it. And, of course, there'll be a slight raise for civilians this year, but the pay of civilians has been frozen for the last couple of years.
We're speaking with Lawrence Korb. He's senior fellow at the Center for American Progress and former assistant defense secretary. And so looking at what is going to likely happen to pay and benefits, do you think that'll have any effect on their ability to recruit and maintain the size, the resulting size, with volunteers?
No, it won't. I mean, it's interesting. When I was there a long time ago, we cut the retirement benefit from 50% after 20 years to 40%. We also went to the high three, and it had no impact. I mean, the real issue is, one of the things, obviously, is what's happened in the economy outside. I mean, it's no accident that recruiting went down horribly during the height of the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan, particularly Iraq, where the American people turned against it. But then as we got out of Iraq and, the economy went south, recruiting, was fine, and retention was fine. And a lot of people they'll always want to paint these apocalyptic scenarios. But no, it really depends upon whether, in fact, the American people support what the military is doing.
And let's talk about the weapons systems a little bit. The secretary has reiterated support for a couple of expensive platforms, but simply making them spin out over more years so that there's less expenditure per year. But in the long term, though, doesn't that really increase the total program cost because of the unit cost?
What they were doing, like with the F-35, is kicking the can down the road. I'm listening to them, and I heard Ash Carter, the deputy, on the NewsHour last night. He said, well, we're not cutting the F-35, and this has had nothing to do with the budget. We're slowing the program down. I said, yeah, it should be slowed down. But you were the ones that accelerated it back in 2009 when you were the undersecretary for acquisition. So, yeah, I mean, I've been involved in this ever since I was on active duty in the 60s, and then worked in the Pentagon in the 1980s. And, I've never seen it so badly managed. Even Senator McCain on the 15th of December gave this speech on the Senate floor, in which he, just talked about how poorly it's been run. That, the average cost of a weapon system is usually 20 to 30% over the initial estimates. Now it's about 50%. And so, and again, that's what happens when, to use Secretary Gates's word, you open up the spigot so you don't have to make these hard choices. I'm glad they're slowing it down, but what I would like to see them do, really to save money, is let the Air Force buy it, but have the Navy and the Marines, continue to buy the F-A-18 E&F, which may not be quite as good, but it's still better than anything else, people have.
And can that be made, are those stealthy? I think the sales point for some of these new generation platforms is the stealthy quality.
Obviously, no, they will not be stealthy, but you've got the F-22 out there, which is stealthy, and the Air Force will have the F-35s if you need them to go in a stealthy environment. But if you're just going in there to support ground troops, you don't need, that stealth, or if you're, that type of aircraft. So, again, you'd like, if money was no object, you'd like to have all, as they say, fifth generation, fighters for everybody. But money is a constraint, and so therefore, if I were doing it, particularly with the cost overruns, you realize the cost of the F-35 has doubled. I mean, we're paying twice as much as we thought. And yet, we're not going to, cancel. We're going to slow it down, hopefully, to, keep the cost from escalating further. But this is not going to stop the cost from, going up. They've already gone, gone up about 50%.
All right. And very quickly, how do you handicap the success possibility of reducing further costs in DOD by some of the administrative and streamlining efforts that have been mentioned?
Again, two things really get me upset about that. One, if they should have been done, why have you been waiting till now? Okay? The efficiencies. And again, you have to be careful because, Secretary Gates announced all these efficiencies, but none of them came true. Like, he was going to cut the number of, flag and general officers. Turned out the Air Force had more before that than when they started. So, I think they're good, but, why wait until now? I mean, you're supposed to be, be good stewards of the taxpayers' money all the time.
All right, so your overall 5-word assessment of the budget presented yesterday?
Much ado about nothing.